Accession number 17526, Reel 3.
Major Richardson, Reel 3. So, how effective could you be against what was going on, against the intercommunal slaughter?
Well, we worked really hard. All the companies were working flat out to try and protect these convoys and trains, but we were not really, we were outnumbered completely and utterly. And at this time, the Indian troops were not 100% reliable, and British troops had all gone home, and so the brunt of the protection fell upon Gurkhas.
Did the Gurkhas tend to take sides?
No, no, completely and utterly neutral.
Even though they were Hindu?
Yeah.
When you say the hot weather, do you mean the hot weather of 47 or 46?
Well, both, I think. Certainly the hot weather of 47 we were in. That was when, yes, hot weather, that's right. We were in Lahore in the hot weather of 47.
And
before independence.
Well, that was August 47.
Yes.
And in Ambala, you were in Ambala after Lahore.
That's right, yes. We moved from, I took the battalion from Lahore to Ambala.
What was the attitude of the miscreants towards British people? Towards white people?
Oh, no problem. They were perfectly friendly towards us.
So it sounds as though the period in the cantonment, of the 3 days in the cantonment, was a bit superfluous.
Well, they were not only, don't forget, they were not all the only British there. There were all the civil servants. In fact, they were mostly Indians. By far, very few British in the cantonment.
Any other incidents that happened to you during the partition of India?
No, I think that's about it. I remember one occasion, the RCO returned when we were in Ambala, and I reverted back to my company, and I was taking a train load, escorting a train load of Muslims from Ambala to Lahore, and we were in the middle of Bhopal when the Hindu engine drivers stopped the train and have reported to me that the engine had broken down, the firebox had burnt out, and on board the train amongst the refugees were luckily firemen and engine drivers of Muslims, and they say it's absolute nonsense, there's nothing wrong with the engine at all. And anyway, I immediately deployed my company out, because we obviously the thing was a put-up job, and the Hindu crew had stopped the train there in order to be attacked. And I deployed my company out into three platoon positions and form of a triangle defensive position, and managed to persuade the engine crew that the game was up. They were going to drive the engine on, and I put a couple of Gurkha soldiers on the footplate with drawn cookeries, and then I withdrew my platoons back into the train, and we started off. As we started off, we moved away. The 3-inch mortar shells started coming down from the Patiala state forces. And we got away with it.
So none of the mortars hit the train?
No.
So it was a planned ambush?
I'm sure it was, yeah.
Any other recollections of the partition of India?
Not really, no. I mean, we were at it all day long, every day, until finally we had to hand our regiment over to India, to the Indian officers, who never came.
Never came?
Well, they didn't come whilst we were there. We had to hand the battalion over to the Gurkha officers. The British officers were posted away, back either to England or mostly to England, back to England.
What did your Gurkhas feel about the arrangements for their future?
Well, my particular battalion were fed up to the back teeth. They had been a POW battalion and had suffered at the hands of the INA, and they disliked the Indians intensely, and they wished to serve on under the British, but unfortunately my regiment was one of the ones selected for service with India, and there was nothing we could do about it.
So they weren't just being polite to you in expressing those opinions?
No, I'm pretty sure.
What happened to you next?
Well, I was posted out from the Indian Army into the... officially, I was posted to the RASC. And I then proceeded to Dialali, vast transit camp, stuffed full of British officers and British other ranks, waiting for a troop ship to take us home. But as sheer luck would have it, there were four regiments, Gurkha regiments, of the old Indian Army were transferred from the Indian Army to the British Army, the 2nd Gurkhas, the 6th Gurkhas, the 7th and the 10th Gurkhas. And whilst I was in Dialali, I was there for about 3 weeks, they suddenly realised, it was typical of what was going on in India in those days, they suddenly realised that they hadn't got enough officers. A large number of the British officers of the four regiments destined for the British Army had decided that they wanted to get out and go and serve with a British regiment or British corps or gunners or whatever. And they suddenly realised that they were a bit short of British officers, and a telegram was sent to Dialali asking for volunteer British officers of the Indian Gurkha regiments who were waiting to go home to volunteer for the British Army Gurkha regiment. Well, I put my hand up straight away and found myself posted to my elder brother's regiment, the 1st Battalion, the 2nd King Edward VII's own Gurkhas in Pune. And off I went as pleased as punch. 2nd.
And what happened to you there?
Well, I went and joined the 2nd Gurkhas and was given command of B Company in Pune.
This is 47 still?
47. Yes, 47. The end of 47. In November.
So how did you come to go to Malaya?
Well, that was very simple. In early 48, the four Gurkha regiments were sent from India to Malaya. we were part of the British Army then, and so the Indian didn't want us in India.
And at that time, were things peaceful in Malaya?
Yes. Things were obviously beginning to brew up, which nobody realised that they were brewing up. But in fact, it was peaceful.
Where were you stationed in Malaya?
Initially in Singapore.
When did the troubles start in Malaya, and how did they first... Well, they started in 1948.
It was May 48. During that particular time, I was sent home. It was on my first home leave since I'd left England in 39. I went on home leave to England on 4 months long leave. My mother was still alive, and I went home on my leave. And whilst I was on leave, the emergency started. I think it started in May when they started murdering rubber planters. And then I came back at the end of my leave. I suppose it was... must have been September, I suppose, in 48, and of course the emergency aim was going full strong and full tilt, and I went back to B Company, took command of it in a rubber estate in Johor.
What was the situation in your area?
Very bad. Johor was one of the worst areas to be affected.
Whereabouts in Johor were you?
I was in a place called Kulai, which I suppose was about 20 miles north, or less than 20, about 50 miles north of Johor Bahru, in the state of Johor.
What acts were the guerrillas perpetrating in your area?
Well, they were attacking rubber estates and killing innocent rubber tappers, and generally trying to intimidate the entire population, and particularly, of course, they were trying to disrupt the rubber industry. And were murdering the British rubber planters, rubber estate owners.
What was your unit able to do about this?
We simply went out patrolling the whole time, trying to locate these gangs of CTs, we called them, communist terrorists, and try and eliminate them as far as we could.
Did you have any success?
Yes, we had several successes. We come across them in the jungle or in the rubber estates and shoot them, kill them. But they were very difficult to come by, and results were pretty weak. I mean, it was a big day when you killed one or two CTs.
So do you mean that you just bumped into them on patrol by accident, or you laid ambushes?
We laid ambushes, and then we tried to... police used to give us extremely inaccurate information as to where they thought we would find a gang of these people, and we'd go and try and attack it. They often, of course, they weren't there, or knew we were coming and would disappear, and we'd come across vast camps where they had been, and they'd scarpered.
Vast camps?
Oh, yes, there were some camps which were capable of holding over 100 of these CTs.
You mean there were clearings in the jungle?
Well, there were, yes, clearings in the jungle, and in the rubber. They were pretty well set up then, because they had been organising, obviously, for many years. And of course, don't forget, these people were the ones whom we had been helping, trying to arming to go and fight the Japanese on our behalf.
Did you capture anything of use from these camps?
No, not much. No. We've got the old bits of paper and whatnot, which we'd letters and which we'd hand over to the police for them to try and decipher.
Were you with your troops on any of these contacts with the enemy?
Well, I was indeed, yes. Often, because I used to go out with them every time.
How big a unit would go out?
Well, we would send out platoons. In the early stages, we were acting on platoons. Later on, we got more experience. We would we'd go out on section patrols.
Can you describe any of the incidents that stick out in your memory?
In those early days, it's difficult. I remember one occasion we got onto a trail. There were sort of food droppings, etc. And we were following them, this trail, for on and on and on and on and on and on. And then suddenly, we caught up with them, and they opened fire on us, and then we immediately opened fire back on them. But they escaped. We didn't make a kill that time. This was at the Gunung Pulai, the big foot of a highest hill. It's hardly called a mountain, although Pulai is the Malay word for mountain.
Any other incidents that you remember?
Well, I remember rubber tappers, rubber estate managers. One manager, he was not far from where we were stationed. He was ambushed. He got away with it, and he managed to drive through the ambush. And he came and reported to me that he'd been ambushed. And so off we went, hot foot, to try and catch up with them, but we didn't. At this stage, it was all very bit haphazard, I don't mind saying.
What did the Gurkhas think of this kind of work?
Well, they were perfectly happy. I mean, it was they were on active service once more, and fighting the enemy. They just simply referred to them as the enemy, Dushman, their word.
How did the Gurkhas behave in the jungle?
They were damn good. They were absolutely first class. Although Nepal is not a jungle-covered country, but they were able to cope with the jungle in a magnificent manner. No problem at all, and they were so damn good at tracking with their keen eyesight that we didn't have to employ trackers like British regiments had to. Our men were able to follow, spot fresh footprints. They could tell you how old the footprints were, and whether you were on a fairly fresh trail or an old one. And also, they were good marksmen, and so that when we did, although our soldiers were, in fact, at that particular time, not particularly well trained, because they had a lot of recruits. And whilst they were doing their recruit training, they were employed on guarding what they call VP, vulnerable points. Their training centre was a place called Ipoh up in North Malaya. And they were misused by being instead of doing their recruit training, they were sent off to guard vulnerable points.
You thought that was a misuse?
Well, it was indeed. Well, the problem was they were so short of troops. What else could they do? No alternative. But it didn't do them much good when they came and joined an active battalion to fighting the terrorists. So they weren't quite as good shots as they should have been.
Did you have any casualties operating against the communists?
Not at that particular time, no.
How long did this go on for then? It's this place you've mentioned.
Kulai. Oh, Kulai. Well, then, of course, we were all over the place. The battalion moved off up to north Johor, a place called Sagamet, where there was a tremendous amount of terrorist activity.
How did that compare with Johor?
Well, it was North Johor, but we were getting a bit more context and we were a bit better trained by this time, and we were killing a few more bandits, the CTs.
Any incidents that happened to you there that you recollect?
Well, one particular one, I was in a place called Wrangham. I was sent out there after a period of rest and retraining, so-called rest, in Singapore, and I was supposed to take over from a British platoon from the Worcester region, and I arrived there and find that the platoon had disappeared. It had gone back without letting anybody know, and I found that this place Wrangham had been taken over by the CTs just about. And so I deployed my platoons, and we had lots of contacts, and killed quite a number. Killed about half a dozen in about the first 10 days we were there. And then whilst we were there, I had two platoons out on operation, and then I got a message from TAC headquarters telling me to take my remaining platoon up to Sagamet, where an informer had come in and was willing to take a party of soldiers off into the jungle where there was a courier post, where he reckoned that there were at least two CTs there, and he would take us in and we would get them. So off I went with my platoon up to Sagamet, and was introduced to the, I think he was an SEP, surrendered enemy personnel. Anyway, he was a chap, the guide who was going to take us into this courier post, which he said we must get there at about 1 o'clock in the morning. And so I reckoned, okay, we should leave Sagamet at somewhere around 9 o'clock, about 9 o'clock at night. And judging by his description of how far it would be walked from the road into the area where the courier post was located, so we set off in a 3-ton lorry, and I had my Land Rover, I think it was a Jeep in those days, and he said we would debus at a certain milestone on the Moor Sagamet Road. And earlier on in the evening it had absolutely been teeming down with rain, and I wasn't very hopeful for these people who say they're going to lead you to a certain place of pretty unreliable. Anyway, as luck would have it, by the time we came to go at 9 o'clock, the clouds had disappeared, and it was a brilliant full moon and a perfect night. And then off we went. We debussed at the milestone, and then we went down a track for I don't know how many miles until we got to the end of the rubber estate. And he told us that the best way to approach this courier post was to go through elephant grass or lalang. And I said, well, no, it's no good. We can't possibly go through the lalang because with the best will in the world, we'll make one hell of a noise. And and he said, no. He said, that's the best way. Anyway, I said, we'll try. And then we went to the lalang, and of course we started. Which was at 1 o'clock in the morning, a mile or so away. And he realized that wasn't on. And so we withdrew out of that lalang and decided to go through another route through a bit of thick jungle. And he was damn clever, this chap, because he suddenly found a spot which he recognized in the middle of the jungle, and he got down on his knees, lit a match, and in the light of the match, he suddenly said, that's the way, go that way. And so, I said, okay, fine. And so off we went, following that way, and he was beginning to take a back seat by this time, because we were getting pretty close to where he reckoned the courier post was. Anyway, we suddenly, in the brilliant moonlight, leading scout spotted the Barsha ahead, so we immediately stopped, got the platoon out in a sort of U formation, and then we charged, opening fire, firing flat out at this Barsha. A few flashes of fire came from see the light of fire, pistol shots came out, and then we got to the Barsha and found four bodies. And he then he said that with luck we'd find one or two, and to our great joy we found dead four. But unfortunately, one of these damn shots from him had hit one of my riflemen. I didn't think he was very badly wounded. I didn't know. Anyway, each platoon had a medical pannier with a so-called medical orderly who didn't know very much about it. But in the pannier was a tube of morphine, which I knew how to work, and I stuck it into this rifleman, and he didn't seem in great pain. Anyway, we made a stretcher, cut down a couple of branches, made a stretcher, shirts and things, and we then started back, and we went back up this long, long trail back, picked up our vehicles, and got back to TAC headquarters, just the dawn was breaking, first light, and I got a hold of the IO, of course they were all asleep, and I knew which window to throw stones at and woke him up, and told him to get the doctor and told him the good news, and that we'd killed four, not realizing how seriously injured the rifleman was. The doctor saw him and he's a bit worse than you think. And anyway, he managed to get a head.